WTF is Retail, presented by Excellent Zephyr, your ERP, integration, and automation specialists.
Okay, today we are joined by David. Thanks for coming in. The co-founder of the innovative phone Nothing. So how are you doing today? Feeling good?
Doing all right, yeah.
Thanks for having me. A long commute into the office today for the podcast?
Very long, yeah.
four space away.
Nice one. So for anyone who's listening and might be wondering where we are today, luckily we are in Barcelona. And normally we're in London, traveling around the UK, recording podcasts. But thankfully for me and Theo, who live in Barcelona, this is a nice short commute for us for a change, just like yours was.
Okay.
So yeah, I'm really looking forward to this. We've spoken to a lot of different brands and retailers. None of them have really been technology. So it's a completely different twist for us to speak about today. So no pun intended, we're going to be talking about all things Nothing. Sorry for that, we had to do it. So yeah, and also about retail, Web3, your journey, fundraising, all that good stuff, which I'm sure you know loads of stuff about. So I guess first things first, how we normally start on the podcast is a little bit about the origins story of Nothing, why and how it was born, if you could tell me.
Sure. So I think after quite a few years within the tech space and specifically the smartphone industry, a few of the co-founders kind of like felt that it was time for a change. I think we had learned a lot of things in our previous companies. For some of us, that was OnePlus, the Chinese smartphone manufacturer. And I guess like we saw a few things that we didn't quite like from the industry. I think it came down to, I guess, like the monotony and how boring design and I guess like innovation had become in the industry. We're talking smartphones because that's where I guess like we feel a bit more comfortable, but I think that applies to, let's say, TVs, fridges, like pretty much anything in consumer electronics. And we felt that, yeah, I mean, maybe there could be a space for somebody to do things a bit differently. And that's how we thought about like starting our own thing, just trying to get the learnings that we had from the industry and I guess like trying to fix as well some of the things that we didn't like being design, and I guess also a bit of the race for specs, two of the main topics that we thought that it was something that wasn't working out for us.
Mm-hmm. Well, and for those watching, I guess we've got a couple of products if you want to just show them for the camera.
So today I'm bringing Nothing Phone 1. We are about to launch Nothing Phone 2 in about a month. So it's going to be in July.
Just for the viewers, I will insert some close-ups so you can have a good look.
And today I brought the ear sticks, which are our, I guess, like non-in-ear version of our audio products. We have also Ear Tube, which we released about a couple months ago. And yeah, I mean, it's when you walk in the street, you don't want to, you know, be run over by a bike, especially here in Barcelona.
So yeah,
the ones that are not in here seem to be a bit of a safer choice when you walk in the street. So that's why I brought the ear sticks.
Awesome. And I guess one thing that I wanted to talk about in your origins journey was fundraising. You know, we mentioned it in the intro. You've got some massive names backing you guys. Steve Huffman, Kevin Lin, Tony Fadell, who was the inventor of the iPod, right? And Google Ventures. So what I wanted to do is rewind to 2020 when you raised $7 million in seed financing. Mm-hmm. How do you even get in front of these people? Like, what does that look like?
I mean, it's not easy, but I think we had a couple of good things. The first one was like our reputation in the industry. So like the time that we spent at OnePlus was probably something that help us open a few doors. We had a lot of good contacts from those days within Google, Qualcomm, and some of these other places. And I think we also have, I guess, a lot of luck with Carl, our CEO. He's quite well known as an entrepreneur in Sweden. And actually, I would say Europe in general seems to have like a very close, tight entrepreneurial community. And essentially, you know, you ask somebody, can you introduce me to this person introduces to somebody else, and then essentially you end up with like some of the big names in the tech industry.
Definitely, I guess networking is obviously super key in any industry, but particularly like you mentioned in Europe, there's a massive tech scene, massive e-commerce scene as well, which obviously plays into you guys as well. So yeah, it's interesting to see how well you've done there.
Just out of curiosity, Barcelona, there's loads of tech companies and branches emerging. Was Barcelona, did you live here before or did you move here for this?
So I'm born and raised in Barcelona, so I studied here, but I moved when I think it was like my third year of university to China.
Mm-hmm.
And that's kind of like how my, I guess, journey begins in the tech, in the e-commerce space. Because before that, I was like biomedicine, which has nothing to do with this.
Yeah.
And I think it was actually, I guess, like the industry itself kind of like brought me back into Europe. With OnePlus, we first started the European company in London. So actually, I was sent to London to start the European side of the business there, and then to Spain, then to Belgium, and then I quit. So then when we kind of like came back again to do things with Carl, the idea was actually to move to London, but due to some personal circumstances, actually bound to Barcelona.
Mm-hmm.
And that's actually the reason why I'm personally here. Yeah. Actually, I'm the only person from the European team that is based out of Barcelona.
Oh, yeah.
I have 3 people out of Madrid, and then we have quite a few people, but they're mostly like sales or PR or marketing, kind of like scattered across Europe. The main offices are in London.
Mm-hmm.
We have a couple of them, one that is a bit more focused on marketing, PR, and sales, and another one that is more focused on design that is led by Adam Bates, which maybe you guys have heard of him.
Yeah.
He used to lead design at Dyson before.
Well,
so pretty good. And then we have also another design office in Stockholm, in Sweden.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess like we have like a lot of like good talent over there. Obviously, we have offices in, I guess, India, which is an important market for us in terms of like volume and size. We have also offices in, I think it's in Hong Kong and in Shenzhen. And that has to do with the place where we manufacture the products.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is like, I mean, one of the good things is that we don't own a factory, so we're a bit like Apple in that sense.
Okay.
Like we design the stuff and then we bring it to, I guess, like what we can do it best.
Yeah.
So we are not bound to a specific country. Our products are manufactured at the moment in China and in India, but you know, like we find a good factory in Europe or in the States or somewhere else, and we have the freedom to actually go and use the factory.
Yeah, interesting that you mentioned Apple there, because a lot of people are comparing, you know, the Nothing Phone, iPhones, and obviously I'm sure we can talk about USPs a little bit down the track throughout the podcast, but I've seen a few comparison videos and they do look similar. A lot of new features, but the cost is just slashed. If we talk about the comparison I saw was iPhone 13 to Nothing Phone 1, similar in many ways, but the cost is like half, right? So is that one of the big USPs for you guys?
Not necessarily. I think cost and price comes a secondary item. I think the main thing for us is to be able to offer a good user experience. Mm-hmm. That means kind of like choosing the right components. I think one of the things I was mentioning at the beginning was the fact that a lot of companies kind of like fall into this race of specs in a way. So like seeing who has fastest charging, most amount of megapixels on a camera, and in reality, well, like the most amount of cameras. Like we've seen that. Actually, we've lived through that in our previous companies. And one of the issues is like when you add a fourth camera for the sake of like saying I have more cameras and kind of like the same competitor at similar price level, but the camera doesn't provide any benefit, you're basically adding a cost to the user that they won't benefit from.
Yeah.
So just increasing the price for the sake of increasing the price, just to make the lives of the PR, the marketing, and the salesperson easier, but not the actual consumer. So one of the things that we are very conscious about is the user experience and how we choose certain components, just to make sure that they are super versatile and kind of like fit everyone's needs, and that the experience that the user is getting is good, so they are not overpaying for something that they will not use, but also they're not getting... We're not chipping out on certain components. So the things that we can show here would be like we went for 2 15-megapixel cameras. One is a wide-angle lens. That one can actually double down also as a micro lens.
Yeah.
So you have 2-for-1. So basically investing a bit more money on the ultra-wide actually pays off because you don't need to throw a hole.
Mm-hmm.
And you're not paying for an extra camera. Or things like also like all the materials when you touch the phone. And we went for aluminum for the outer frame,
mm-hmm.
and glass from the back, mm-hmm. so it feels very premium. it is a bit more costly, but we think it's something that you're interacting with every day. Actually, makes sense to make that extra investment on those type of things.
Cool.
Yeah. Also, while we're on the comparison of the iPhone, I actually told my girlfriend today, she works in a school as a teacher, and I said, oh, I'm coming doing a nothing phone. She's like, oh, what's that? I told her, and she said to her students, oh, you know, my boyfriend's doing a podcast with the co-founder of Nothing. And the first thing the kid said was, oh, they're better than an iPhone. So it's the proof's in the pudding right here. So that's kind of cool.
The kid is saying,
I was like, kids and drunk people never lie.
Yeah. That's basically it, yeah.
Yeah.
I know you've kind of showed us the products a little bit, but there's a couple of things in particular I'm kind of intrigued to learn more about. The first one of those is the Phone 2. Could you tell us a little bit about that? Is it true it has a lower carbon footprint than the Phone 1? What's that all about? And just give me a bit of insight there.
Yeah, sure. So there's not a lot of things that I can tell you guys about because everything is still under wraps. Like, you will be able to see very soon short keynote where we'll explain every single detail about the product. What I can tell you is that the keynote will happen sometime in July. We still haven't revealed exactly the date.
Okay.
It's not very far away.
Yeah.
That today is 1st of June. Mm-hmm. Then in terms of the specs, I mean, the difference with Phone 1 is that Phone 2 is going to be a proper flagship, meaning that it will have a premium processor, in this case being the Qualcomm Snapdragon. I think it's like 8 plus Gen 1. Mm-hmm. They changed the names recently, so they're overcomplicating things. Like, used to be easier in the past. That will have also like a larger battery and a larger screen. Mm-hmm. But that's all I can say about Phone 2. In terms of the carbon footprint, yes, it's one of the things that we have actually tried to focus on. I mean, it's one of the many things that we're trying to do in order to, I guess, like, make the company a bit more eco-friendly. I think in general, like, the tech industry is actually guilty of like polluting quite a lot in the manufacturing process. So we're trying our best, especially because like we're a new company, so we might as well just start like from the beginning with a bit of more of an eco-friendly mindset. And just trying to do everything that we can in terms of like using renewable energy in the factory, recycled materials for like some of the components, trying to get rid of plastics in packaging and some other parts of the products. And then where we can also offsetting some of the carbon footprint in this case.
Brilliant. And Air 1 was completely carbon neutral, which is massive statement. I thought that was particularly interesting as well. So congratulations on it, I suppose.
Yeah. And another thing that was on your website, which I didn't really know anything about, was you call it, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, the Glyph interface.
Glyph interface.
What is that?
Yeah, so I think Glyph actually comes from hieroglyph, so like Egyptian.
Like signs.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I think here the idea is we understand that one of the issues that smartphones bring to people in their lives is like they actually have distractions, so they don't get to focus on their real life.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you realize, but like the phone is upside down. So I don't actually get to see who is sending messages or what's going on. There's some light patterns that actually turn on, and then it does it once and that's it. So essentially what I'm doing is I'm consciously taking a stance here and just making sure that I'm focused on what is happening here, as opposed to like taking my phone, kind of like seeing what's going on and like who's messaging me and so on. So the Glyph interface, actually, we will see a bit of an evolution with the next device. But what it tries to do is like to find a way to communicate with the user, but in a way that is a bit less obtrusive. It would just have it like notifications pop up and you are always on display, which we also have.
Awesome.
Cool.
Yeah, I mean, it's super important, you know, considering the impact you guys are trying to make and how you're trying to do things differently. We appreciate you giving your full attention to us right now, right? And it's something that definitely I struggle with my current phone. Mm-hmm. Maybe I need to switch over. but yeah, in terms of like the next question, manufacturing, you spoke a little bit about, you know, pulling the best products from wherever you can get them and not being tied down. What is your process with that? I guess, yeah, the whole manufacturing process. I'm keen to know a bit more about that.
Sure. So I'll explain a bit loosely because I don't want to lose people explanation, but essentially what we do is like we start with like some concepts that are just like hand-drawn in our London office or Stockholm office, and essentially those become eventually kind of like 3D renders. Those 3D renders get 3D printed, a lot of 3D printers, a lot of different types of 3D printers in our London office.
Cool.
But we also have like more professional like block printing than that happens in China. So that happens, things like this reviews every single week. So every single week, like there's like printed units being shipped from China into London, into Stockholm. And essentially there's like a lot of changes being made to those products. And then once more or less the outer design is finalized and ready, then that's when also the process of like making sure that all the components fit starts. So there's a lot of like layers that make a phone. So there will be already a certain space like allocated to say the motherboard, the battery, the camera, and so on. But then what we find sometimes, that we have a lot of like fights between like the industrial designers and the people who actually have to make sure that the manufacturing is possible, because like sometimes the design that you want to have and you know, the one that is possible doesn't necessarily match. So yeah, I mean, usually we have to find some sort of like agreement. Then once that has happened, there's like different phases to just like making any product or a smartphone. You have the what is called the EVT, which is the engineering verification test unit. So that is kind of like a device that turns on. So like for instance, I have an EVT for phone 2 at home.
Cool.
The thing is like the inside, I mean, it's essentially a phone 1.
Yeah.
But the outside looks like what phone 2 will look like.
Okay.
So that is the first step. Okay, it looks good. When you turn it on, like it feels like, you know, like a proper phone and so on.
Yeah.
If everything is fine, then you go into like what is called the DBT. So that has the design verification testing unit. So you have almost pretty much everything final. So the hardware inside is the final one. And then there might be like some minimal changes compared to like the final version on the design side. We go into the PVT, which is the product verification testing unit. And those are the exact same units that we'll actually make into mass production.
Cool.
But it's just kind of like testing just to make sure that everything is ready, everything is final, everything can pass quality control and quality assurance before they actually start, you know, like churning thousands of devices every single day.
Yeah. It's interesting to hear that. I mean, you obviously talked about you don't want to lose the listeners, but I think it is a different take because like typically we talk to maybe a fashion brand, which has to do certain bits of that process, right? The design, the quality testing, but there's definitely way more steps in between for you guys, given the complexity of the product you're selling. So yeah, thank you for going into a little bit of detail for that. So, you know, you're definitely a tech guy. We can hear it in the way that you explain even the manufacturing process. You know what's going on as one of the co-founders. So I wanted to know from your perspective, what do you see in the future of, well, retail, but also like smartphones? Obviously, phone 2, is right now. What's after that, like in your mind?
So as a company, I think kind of like the most immediate feature is to build the full ecosystem of products. So start to kind of like use the phone, whether it's like phone 1, phone 2, maybe in the future phone 3.
Yeah.
As kind of like the centerpiece to control all those devices. So that means wearables, that means stuff for your home. I think we see a big opportunity in those segments within consumer tech. And I think the issue that we see within like the other competitors is like there's not a good cohesive, I would say, network of products that work well with each other. Because everyone is trying to do, I guess, like the best they can in a specific vertical. So there's very few companies that do multiple products. And the ones that do multiple products, you know, they're really expensive. Or the design is not that good. So we think that there's kind of like in that intersection, a space for us. Then I guess like going back to the question itself in terms of like more about the future, this is going to be my personal opinion.
Totally. That's what we want.
It's not necessarily match with like what Nothing thinks. I think we are probably going to like more of a space where we were some of the technologies, so like whether it's like smartwatch, smart glasses, maybe some sort of like ring or gloves to kind of like control the stuff. But like, it feels more like mixed reality or like a meta reality type of scenario, at least to me.
Mm-hmm.
Another podcast asked me if, you know, I was seeing this Neuralink from Elon Musk kind of like having a lot of future. I would say, having studied biomedical science, I mean, I think we're really far away from like being able to understand like how the brain works to be able to implant like chips and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think people will be very receptive to like,
yeah.
stuff, like surgeries and like medical procedures. But you never know. I think like AI and like all like these new quantum computers and stuff like that probably can advance things quite a lot.
Yeah.
When it comes to like this type of more, I guess, like biotechnical advancements. So I think it's going to be an interesting future.
And also with consumer uptake, you know, you mentioned that maybe not putting a chip into yourself at the moment, people might not be receptive to that, but AI is very much mainstream now, right? So you would imagine that as we advance with technology, people are more receptive to that. I would say so myself. Would you agree?
I think so. I mean, it all depends on how it goes. I think people right now are a bit scared of AI in general. I think if you understand how like some of these models work, you kind of like feel a bit more at ease.
Yeah.
It's just like something that is having different words and patterns.
Yeah.
So it's maybe not something that will kill us. But I understand that some people that might feel a bit more foreign to these kind of things might feel threatened in certain ways.
Yeah.
To me, like anything that has to do with tech feels like, again, like trying to advance humanity in a certain way. And I think one of the feelings that we also try to bring with Nothing and a bit of the retro style has to do also with the fact that we feel that back in the 70s and the 80s, I don't know, I wasn't born there. The concept that people had of like technology was like of something good, something that was kind of like make humanity get up, like take the next leap. And I think right now we feel totally the opposite, like, you know, it's like everyone is spying on us, like
yes.
the spying device and this and that. That is not how we want people to feel about technology.
Of course.
And I think, yeah, bringing a bit back of the old school style kind of like also tries to signal to that and to kind of like invoke some of those feelings.
Interesting. And, you know, while we're talking about tech advancements, things like that, I saw that Nothing previously with the Nothing Fame, you could pay via crypto.
Mm-hmm.
Previously, that, yes. that was a possibility. So why don't you offer that anymore? And what kind of happened there?
Sure. So the thing is, like, when crypto kind of like started booming,
yeah,
I would say maybe like a year and a half ago. Let's say, yeah. A year and a half ago, I think it was like November 2021.
Depends who you ask, right? Like,
yeah, sure.
Mainstream.
You know, I've been through both waves.
Yeah.
I'm still holding some. But no, I mean, I think we basically thought that finally this would kind of like go ahead, get into more of a mainstream audience. I think right now what we have seen is like we wanted to implement this to also, I guess, like give certain advantage to our own e-commerce, kind of like, because again, it's not like you can pay with the phone in crypto. It's like you can actually pay for your phone in crypto.
Okay. Yeah.
So that's important distinction.
Yeah.
You can still pay with your phone if you have
a
Wonder Wallet. Yeah. Exactly. So you can do it. But the reason why we no longer accept that is like we were seeing actually not that many orders coming through paid in crypto. Those orders were coming from certain countries that maybe are not allowed to buy certain products because of, you know, certain things that are happening in the geopolitical space at the moment.
Yeah.
And then on top of that, it's like we saw a few of the more like people in legit countries purchasing those things. A few of them wanted to return. Fluctuation on the price of cryptocurrency is so big that they complained when they saw that, you know, now whenever they paid us was worth less.
Yeah.
So it was a bit complicated to, I guess, like manage expectations. And I think the volume itself, to the grant, kind of like continuing with that.
Yeah.
I mean, we believe, well, at least I believe that in the future, like, crypto has a space in our daily lives. We also have, I guess, like, toyed around with NFTs, and that has had, I guess, like, some impact on how we see the community and how we, I guess, provide certain discounts, certain things. And personally, I remember also of the holders of, like, some of the Adidas NFTs that kind of, like, also get you access to certain perks and certain things. So I do see some sort of utility in certain scenarios.
Yeah. I wanted to ask you about the NFT idea anyway, right? Because I've done a bit of looking into it. I went down the rabbit hole with NFTs and retail and the cool uses for them. I think you sort of touched on there, like, the loyalty aspect. Where do you see the potential for that specifically in retail, or e-commerce in particular, obviously?
That's a good question. I mean, I think it's quite interesting to see, I guess, like, all the possibilities, the kind of, like, bringing some of these NFTs into, like, offline events, like, kind of, like, being your ticket to access an event, or, like, again, trying to reward somebody. In this case, we had we issued a couple of NFTs. Ones were called black dots, and other ones were called the red dots. You need 10 black dots to be able to convert them into a red dot. Red dot gives you some kind of, like, higher level of perks, and then the black dot essentially gives you access before anyone else to our products and certain discount in the product that we just launched.
Awesome.
So this was part of, like, how we build the community, and essentially we issued those, so, like, we airdropped those NFTs into the wallets of people who invested in our company. So we did the crowdfunding. We have actually done two crowdfundings, kind of, like, following Series A and Series B. And the idea is we wanted to build a community that was, like, tied to us. So a community that had skin in the game. So essentially it's like, okay, like, if you want to be part of the community, you need to invest in the company. And that was kind of, like, the initial premise. We have subsequently, like, opened to certain countries that are not allowed to enter into crowdfunding, like, could be the US, Canada, or Japan.
Yeah.
Which are also important countries to us. But now we've found two, like, the focus is definitely on the US, which is a country that we were not selling from one of.
Cool.
It's a complicated market.
Yeah.
Maybe talk about, like, some of the challenges of not only retail, but, like, dealing with carriers in the US. And yeah, I think it was definitely an interesting experiment. We need to see how we can develop this a bit further.
Yeah. And it was pretty successful, right? The crowdfunding, you guys broke some sort of record for how quickly you...
Yeah, yeah. We spoke to the guys at Monzo because I think they were the previous record holders.
Okay.
And I think we were the fastest one to reach £1 million funded. And I think we also broke a couple more records.
It was less than a minute, if I'm not mistaken. That was crazy. Yeah, yeah. Less than a minute. And, well, I guess this ties into it, right? What they get out of it for...
Exactly.
For the buying in.
It's like, we didn't have any products back then. Like, when we did that one. So yeah, it was a big surprise to all of us. We're thinking, you know, we might be able to do $1 million in a couple of weeks or something. Yeah. But yeah.
We have to do a segue here while we're on it. Is that obviously you've got a really strong community, right?
Yes.
People are really invested in what you're doing, a lot of hype around it. Do you do lots of, like, do you do in-person events with your community, and what do they look like?
Yes, yes, we do. I think we held one about a month ago in the US ahead of, like, our launch over there. But I think one of the reasons why we have a retail space in Soho is actually this, to be able to actually get through, to meet the community and to understand a bit better, like, who they are, what they like, what they don't like. But I think also with that, we have, I guess, like, a figure that is a bit different. That is the community board member.
Okay.
So the community gets together and kind of, like, elects a board member. Not exactly a board member, but, like, somebody that kind of, like, sits and
represents for them.
And represents the community.
Yeah.
And then I think that's kind of, like, the way that we make sure that we stay true to ourselves and true to the community, and that we don't do anything stupid or crazy
that they don't want.
Accountable yet.
Yeah, awesome. And you mentioned your bricks and mortar store there. How is that going, first of all? And second of all, what's the importance of integrating your e-commerce with the bricks and mortar?
Yeah. I mean, it's going surprisingly well. I remember, like, back in the previous company, I made some calculations and we had to sell a lot of phones to be able to actually pay. We were looking into, like it's Oxford Street, a bit more expensive than Soho. But nonetheless, I think the store is definitely going better than expected. We sell a sizable amount of products.
Yeah.
It also allows us to diversify a bit more. So what we offer, so one of the companies that co-founded Nothing is Teenage Engineering, which is like this Swedish company that makes a lot of, like, mostly audio products, like synthesizers, speakers, stuff like that. So we do sell some other products. That kind of like helps us, I guess, like in the absence of a full ecosystem that we want to achieve in the coming years, to be able to offer more than, you know, just two or three products.
Yeah.
And I think that is going to be, I mean, it is an important part of our strategy of being able to offer a physical space where people can go and try the products.
Yeah.
It is not as important when it comes to, like, sales, although it's selling well.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more about the experience and how we want to portray the brand. Because, like, we do have a lot of, like, retail partners and a lot of, like, operators as well.
Yeah.
In all the different countries. But the reality is that, you know, you go to John Lewis, just to give, I guess, like, one of the names of the partners
in
the UK, they have a very specific layout for how they display phones or earphones.
Yeah.
So we cannot fully display everything the way that we want.
Yeah.
And this is a place where we can actually do that.
Mm-hmm. So in terms of brand, your brand and maintaining that, it's quite difficult when you go through marketplaces or wholesale channels with stockists. Whereas where you have your own store, you can obviously select how that's done, right?
That's right.
And is the idea to open more stores then throughout the UK, throughout Europe, Barcelona maybe?
Maybe, no. We need to see how we can ensure that the retail store is able to self-sustain, I guess, like, profit perspective and cost perspective. And I think if we're able to figure that out, then Pro is going to be just trying to find, I guess, like, some key locations where we see a high amount of users that could potentially benefit from having a place to go physically.
Yeah.
And then look into that. I think probably not a lot of stores in the UK or in London specifically, but, like, maybe look into, like, some of the other key countries that we have.
Yeah, cool. Awesome. I guess it's a good moment for me to mention our sponsor for this episode, Silk, who do flexible pop-up spaces. So if you're listening in and you have a retail brand throughout the UK, it can be a good way to test the waters with retail space before jumping in to a space in Oxford Street or Soho, for example. But to move on, the second part of that question was more about, I suppose, integrating e-commerce and your bricks and mortar.
Yes.
How important is that? You mentioned the brand side of that. But how important is that from a tech data flow?
Yeah. I mean, it's actually pretty interesting. We are not very, I guess, like, high tech when it comes to, like, the tech stack that we use in our e-commerce. So we use Shopify.
Yep.
And the good thing is, like, Shopify also gives you an option of having retail locations.
Yep.
And actually, the good thing is, like, everything is interconnected. So we can see kind of, like, immediately how sales are going in the Soho store. I guess, like, we don't have maybe as much data in terms of, like, we don't know where this person lives, for instance, but I think it's still, like, very valuable to be able to see how sales are going, amount of units that we're selling in, let's say, Soho specifically versus maybe, like, London with e-commerce.
Yeah.
And yeah, I mean, like, some surprising findings. Actually, recently we were looking into the numbers, and the reality is, like, actually the Soho store sells about the same amount of units from single store as we sell on our own e-commerce into London.
Wow.
So it is quite impressive.
Yeah. And just focus on your brick and mortar here. And
yes,
because your phone, you know, the Nothing phone is so kind of, it's all based around user experience and those kind of things.
you know, there's lots of opportunity. I see lots of opportunity in your brick and mortar store to do loads of cool user experience things. And it just goes hand in hand. It's kind of nice when a product goes hand in hand with something that can happen in a physical store. Is there any cool ideas for, like, you know, your in-store brick and mortar experiences? So is there any cool ideas, displays, you know, unusual things you've been thinking about?
And hear the marketing guy coming out of here.
No, that's cool. I mean, my background is also in marketing, so I also enjoy this part. We've actually thought about a lot of different things. The problem is, like, retailers are also usually not very open to making very fancy things. So I think probably the weirdest thing that we have been able to execute was the gigantic mantis, praying mantis that we have. Thing is in, so it's in London. Saying Selfridges, thing is Selfridges. So if you go downstairs, kind of like on the tech space, we've been able to actually have, since I guess like the year one days, this huge mantis, which was I guess like the animal that we used to introduce the product. We have always been using insects for our audio.
The beetle kind of thing with the headphones.
Beetle for the year two, and now, I mean, with for one, it's been parrots, and we'll have a different animal.
You can tell that you know what the animal is, you just won't tell us yet. Yeah, that's cool. That's cool.
So I guess moving on here, what we like to ask retailers is, or, you know, people like yourself, co-founder of a business, is what is your favorite brand, retail brand at the moment, and why?
I mean, I don't necessarily like retail very much. I have to say that. I think e-commerce is definitely the future. I think nothing, it is to a certain extent, an e-commerce matter. But I guess, like, it's going to be really weird. But I think Fornum and Mason, actually.
Okay.
I don't know exactly why, but I think the stores, the way that they display the products, also the consistency across the different stores. So if you go to Heathrow, like, it does feel like Fornum and Mason in a way. And I guess, like, the history that the brand has, you can sort of, like, feel it when you get into the stores. So I think that is something that is difficult to achieve. I mean, I could have said Apple. But it just felt like a bit too obvious. Yeah, I mean, it is a bit of a different one.
And if you were to include e-commerce in the wider retail scheme, would your answer be different?
That would be a bit more challenging. I mean, I would say two of them. I think, obviously, Amazon, that's an amazing jump. I mean, it is not a beautiful design, but it's, like, very well optimized. So I think you need to give kudos to them, because, like, they do a very good job when it comes to, like, getting people to buy things. Like, Prime is so predictive. My wife shouts at me every time, like, you bought something else? So, yes, I did. But then I think also one that is doing things quite well, the thing especially with, like, the marketing, cultural marketing specifically, actually there's two brands, both Nike and Adidas. I think they do a fantastic job with, like, maybe not so much like e-commerce in a traditional way, but more like with specific apps for, like, sneakers and things like that, confirmed for Adidas, and I guess, like, sneakers for Nike. And I think they actually, they do also a fantastic job.
I'm just curious here. You're naming a lot of, like, the statement brands, like your Nikes, your Adidas, your Apples. Is that where you see Muffin Phone in that bracket at some point?
We see Apple as our main competitor. I mean, it sounds extremely cocky and maybe a bit delusional, but I think we need to aim high if we want to achieve what we are, I guess, like, setting ourselves to achieve.
Yeah. Interesting. And, I mean, you're doing all the right things, right? And you're expanding globally. We do usually finish with that question, but it just sort of got me thinking, you know, expanding into new markets is something that I'm sure you have a lot of experience into throughout your career. So I wanted to ask you this. What would you say is the best strategy, right? We've talked about marketplaces with Amazon. We've talked about physical retail, e-commerce. How would you today, how are you going to enter into the US? You know, like, how's that done?
Sure. PR.
Yeah.
Honestly, that is the main thing. Here you need to know the right media, you need to introduce them to the product, you need to brief them on the next launch, and you need to get them basically on board and excited about the upcoming products.
Yeah.
Once that is done, then it's a lot easier to actually go and negotiate with the likes of the retailers, retailers, mm-hmm. or operators. So you need to have some sort of like buzz and hype to be able mm-hmm. to move everything else.
Yeah.
So it tends to be quite useful to have some proof points in other countries mm-hmm. that are somehow similar. So like, for instance, this is just an example. If I wanted to go and speak to the guys at T-Mobile in the US, I'll make sure that we had, you know, like it's the Linus Tech Tips and Mr. Who's the Boss, Dave to the and Unbox Therapy, just to name a few tech influencers, talking about the product, and then I'll make sure that the guys that we're already working with in Germany, for instance, which is where Deutsche Telekom is from, so
okay.
well, is from, say good things about us mm-hmm. to the American counterparts. So it is all about, I guess, like making sure that your reputation and the excitement are in place
yeah.
before you start the negotiation. So like we are talking now to a certain pretty big e-tailer to expanding into US.
Awesome.
And the proof points are, look how well it went in Europe.
Yeah, mm. of course. No, that's brilliant. I think that's the perfect place to end on. And I'm keen to see how you do go in the US. I hope really well. And I think it's really well. But thank you for joining us, David. If people do want to find more about Nothing and Nothing 2 when it comes out, where can they... Phone 2 when it comes out, where can they do it?
Not tech.
Damn, it's so easy. Two-word answer, perfect. And as always, thank you to our sponsors, Silk, which I mentioned before. And if people want to find more about us, Excellent Zephyr, we do digital transformation for retailers, so implementation of ERP and integration. You can find more at www.excellentzephyr.com. Thanks for joining us and see you next time on WTF's Retail.